We have a proclivity for positivity, yeah.
Hello, pod people. Welcome to episode number 2 of the Proclivity for Positivity with your hosts, Ben and Steve. And if you remember anything about last week, if you happen to listen to the episode, there is a decent amount of listens, so it's possible. At the end, Steve came at me with a challenge. Since we are doing positive stories, he expressed the wish that we both come up with a story, not tell each other about the story, and then we kind of decide whose story we think is the best. And I actually do trust us both. We're both reasonable enough people that if his story is better, I will say it, and I think the same from him as well. So that said, we have 2 stories to present today. And obviously, if you guys want to reach us on throughtheabysspodcast.com, Facebook, wherever we can be reached, which is multiple places, let us know whose story you think is the best too. If Steve says his story is this wonderful thing and it's a piece of shite, you know, feel free to say that. So that said, we're gonna...
Interesting.
So that said, my story, I feel it might be unbeatable. I got love. I got, like, enduring love. I got heartstrings being pulled. I got nostalgia. I got all the golden tickets. What are you feeling? You feeling confident?
Interesting. I like my story a lot. I've actually had some recent experience.
Ooh, experience.
With something that is with something that's similar to my story. So it definitely tugs at my heart and makes me, you know, connects to me. So.
Okay. Okay.
We'll see.
I see. You're coming at me strong, trying to tie this to your real life experience and shit. Come on, player.
Right.
All right. Well, who goes first?
You know what? I don't know. It's the first time I figured.
We have to do it diplomatically.
Challenge.
We have to do it diplomatically, right? So, you thinking a little Rochambeau? Rock, paper, scissors?
Rock, paper, scissors? Okay. All right. Can you see me?
I can see you. Ready? Wait, we got to get this established. I know we've done this together a long time, but people always are like, which way is it? Is it 1, 2, 3, shoot, or 1, 2, shoot? And shoot is the 3.
3, shoot.
Okay, 1, 2, 3, shoot, and best out of 3.
Best out of 3, that's right.
All right, ready?
I'm holding up right to the camera.
Ready? Go.
Yep.
1, 2.
Paper.
Scissors.
Shoot.
We got a double paper.
Cut. No.
Oh, you're a scissor? Fuck.
I'm a scissor.
You might have cheated there, but I'll take your word. You got a scissor. So that's one. All right, let's go. All
right, that's one. Okay.
Rock. Paper.
Scissor.
Shoot.
Shoot.
All right, I beat you. You're a rock. I'm a paper.
Okay. All
right. All right. So we got one more. Ready? You go ahead and count it off. You seem better at it than me.
Okay. Rock. Paper, scissor, shoot.
I got scissors.
Oh, so do we. Both got scissors.
Fuck. Oh, sorry, pod right. People. About the F-bomb.
Yeah.
All right.
A lot of F-bombs and proclivity for positivity.
That's true. There's a lot of F-bombs.
All right. Rock, paper, scissor, shoot.
I got the scissors.
Oh! Ready. So... Now you get to choose. Do you want to go first, or do you want me to go first?
Oh, well played. Like any smart NFL team, which I am, you already know where this is going because you're a smart NFL team. I'm going to kick the ball. It's you, Steven. I would like the audience to hear my story last, have it fresh in their minds.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Well, I would like to introduce you to someone.
What?
I'm going to introduce you to a man named John Pritchard. All right? Now, in 2021, Mr. Pritchard was 78 years old. Right? So, in math, you figured out. John's father was a soldier in World War II.
Ooh.
Now, John is Welsh. He's from Wales.
Is that what that means?
Born.
Sorry, I'm just going to heckle you in the middle of your story.
Say that again?
You said he's Welsh. That means he's from Wales. I said, is that what that means? I'm just going to heckle you throughout your story.
Oh, I see. Okay. All right. Well, so John is born in Porthcawl in Bridgend County. John's father is part of the D-Day storming of the beaches of Normandy, France, during World War II, and he's injured there. And when John's father returns, John's grandfather actually tells him to clear off. Doesn't want him to be a part of John's life.
Mm.
So John has kind of a rough upbringing. In fact, John's mother wanted to take John to America, but his grandfather convinced his mother that if she tried to go to America, that the grandfather would kick her out and keep John there in Wales. So it was very important to him that he stay and grow up in Wales. In Wales. So his mother remarries after John's father is kind of kicked out, and unfortunately she marries not a nice man. The stepfather is very abusive to John, and in fact John is then taken into foster care, because of all of the abuse that he suffers from his stepfather.
Mm.
And so it seems like when the stepfather steps into his life, he loses his mother as well. And he spends much of his life, his childhood, living in care homes, which I think is the equivalent of foster care across South Wales. In fact, it's so bad that John doesn't even learn the alphabet until the age of 10. At the age of 15, he leaves school to become an engine cleaner, which on trains. Which
I was going to say, on what? Trains, okay.
Right, and I had no idea that was a job, but you can see early on in life, John has a really rough go of it. So, anyway, he moves out of Wales at 16 into England, and if you're not familiar with the UK, you know, Wales is part of England, but it's not part of England. But he moves to a place called Didcot, Oxfordshire, where he would stay for about 5 years. There, he grows up. He has a few romances, adult relationships, until he finally ends up meeting a woman named Jill. And Jill is the woman of his dreams. He marries her, and they start a successful business and family together. John has two sons, and each of them have two kids. So John has four grandchildren, two children. And then in, like, October of 2021, his son convinces him to take one of those DNA tests. You know, the Ancestry or 23andMe, right? Have you taken those, Ben?
I have not.
No, they're interesting. I've taken them. And I'll tell you a quick story about that later. They're fascinating. So just for fun, just to see, you know, what's there. It's a Christmas present for his dad. And so he takes it. And he never really followed up with it. The thing is, when you take these tests, you get kind of a report on your own ancestry, like what where your ancestors were from, some of your genealogy, and they'll connect you with people who are already on the site who have given their DNA who might be related to you. I get messages all the time saying they've found a fifth or sixth cousin, you know, that I'm connected with through DNA. And, you know, that's far enough away. We have thousands and thousands of these, you know, fifth and sixth and seventh cousins. So they'll send you messages if there's somebody that's linked to you. But if you don't really follow it, which I don't really follow mine, you don't really notice anything. One day, John receives an email from a man named Carl Benson. And in the email, he says...
Like, you guys, the actual email? What are you looking at?
Carl Benson sends him an email, and in it he says, "Hi, I'm your son.
Ooh.
I fully understand that this is potentially a total bombshell and a result that neither of us had ever expected to come across. But what I will say is that this all happened well over a half century ago, and there is nobody on my side who can be hurt by this revelation. I would dearly love the chance to talk and meet with you to put the final pieces of the jigsaw together. So, Carl Benson, who's 56 at this point, right, and John Pritchard, who's 78, had never known about each other at all.
He didn't even know he had a son, right?
Right. John dated a woman before he met Jill. Briefly dated. They parted ways from all that I can see here, and amicably parted ways. But she was apparently pregnant and never told John that she was.
Damn.
So John had no idea that he had this son out there. John responds to the email and says, "Hi, Carl. It's John here. I thought it would be best to rip the plaster off." You know, and I think that's the Welsh version of rip the band-aid off.
Yeah.
Right?
I like it.
And so Carl says that they chatted unusually naturally, and it became very obvious that they shared very similar backgrounds, traits, beginnings, likes, dislikes, and...
Can I interject for a second?
Yeah, absolutely.
I just think it's interesting that he said unusually naturally, just because, I mean, I get it. They didn't even know each other exists, so I get it mentally. Like,
right.
I get it cognitively, but then obviously, like, genetically, it makes sense, right?
Well, right, but I mean, how many people that we're genetically linked to do we have no natural, conversation with that we struggled to
right. talk to? Yeah, I mean, yeah, you're right. I'm just thinking of, like, the stories of, like, identical twins that have been separated and they end up with, like, the same job and their wives have the same names, and it's like, genetics do a lot, right? So.
Oh, yeah. And when they talk about, like, having similar backgrounds, traits, beginnings, likes, dislikes, you know, I got to really thinking about my own son and how, like, every time he does something, my wife and I look at each other and we're like, "Who's that?" Right?
It's somebody.
Like my son loves watermelon. Like he has remarked on numerous occasions that he can eat watermelon, nothing but watermelon for the rest of his life. That's 100% me. That's he gets that taste from me. But he also loves tomatoes, and he will eat. Like,
and you hate
big
them.
Of cherry tomatoes. Yeah, exactly.
Like, hey, pod people, I gotta say this. Like, Steve is irrationally, ridiculously opposed to tomatoes. It's not like he just won't eat a tomato. It's like if a tomato was on the plate, he won't eat that plate. Like, it can't be within inch of
a plate.
Well, fair. But he's not going to eat anything that was near the tomato because the tomato juice could have... I've seen this shit with my own eyes.
Yep. And to call it irrational is ludicrous. I just know exactly what I like.
Yeah, no, you're right. It's not irrational. You just don't like them. I like tomatoes, so to me it makes no sense, right?
I'm a big guy, and I can eat a lot of most things. But tomatoes, what are you going to do? But, so it's funny, because I track those things. I track those things with Oscar. I track the way he laughs, the way he walks, the way he runs. And I think about that. And so for these two guys, you know, father and son, who had, you know, 56 years did not know they existed, to track these things, these backgrounds, the traits, the beginnings, the likes, that's such a cool moment for me. I thought about that quite a bit. And so then, from their initial phone calls and email exchanges, Carl told John he also had two more granddaughters who are now in their 20s. A month later, the pair decided to meet up for lunch in London. And he says the hardest thing was when I met him, because I was on the train thinking, what is going on here? I'm on a train traveling to London to meet my father, said Carl, right? You know, that's such a strange thing. You know, I grew up with both of my parents, you know, in the house. I'm 45 and they're still alive and together. And so that doesn't, you know, register. But then, you know, my wife, she's met her biological father exactly one time, and she didn't like him. And he didn't seem to have much, you know, interest in following up in her life, and that was that.
Yeah, that's a good reason not to like him.
Right, and it's so foreign to me to have that experience, but here he is about to meet his father, you know, physically meet him for the first time in his entire life at 56 years old, and that is a really unnatural thing. So
yeah, and you know what's interesting too? You alluded to it in your story about Oscar, where he's talking about you're kind of watching him develop into traits that are like you and Connie, right? Where like they're going to meet as adults, and then it's just going to be like blatant in your face. Oh, I do that too. Oh, I do that too. Right? Like you get to see those develop.
Right. And she didn't like him, and he didn't seem to have much, you know, interest in following up in her life, and that was that.
Yeah, that's a good reason not to like him.
Right, and it's so foreign to me to have that experience, but here he is about to meet his father, you know, physically meet him for the first time in his entire life at 56 years old, and that is a really unnatural thing. So that part got me too, just glad that he was alive, because that's going to connect to a personal story that I have for you.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a question? Did John have children besides him?
Yes, John had two sons.
Okay, so he's got brothers.
With his wife, yes. With his wife, Jill. So he does have brothers.
Cool.
And so now he's got six grandkids instead of four. Mm. And he's got three kids instead of two. So John said, despite not knowing Carl until recently, he was very proud of him. And the pair were making up for lost time. And later that year, John, the father, attended the wedding of Carl's daughter, his granddaughter. And he and Carl went to France together later on. And so we went to they went to Normandy, which is, of course, the site of D-Day, and spent 5 days there seeing where my father and his grandfather served, said John. So John's father, who had been wounded there at D-Day, who his grandfather had chased off, they went back and saw where he had served and where he had fought. And then we had a private guide for 3 days who took us around the cemeteries and beaches on the American side, plotted both of Carl's grandfather's graves. And so, you know, Carl gets to step into his family and, you know, learn even more background. And then for their next trip, the pair are planning to go to New York next year. And now living in Bromley and Kent, John has three children and six grandchildren. He's a great guy. We really hit it off. It's just sad that we've lost 55 years. But that's life, he said. I felt sad that he could have been my son from the start, but he's a lovely guy and a lovely family, and I only wish I'd met him many, many years ago.
Damn.
And so I think this, you know, this idea that Carl spent his entire life wondering who his father was, wondering why his father wasn't there. Now he gets to meet him, and they get along beautifully. Carl's family gets to expand, and John's family and life gets to expand. You know, when you're 78, you get to a point in your life where life starts taking things away from you.
Mm-hmm.
You start losing friends and family around you.
You start
losing physical traits. And so it's not often at that time that you get to gain something so wonderful. And he did. And so that made me very happy.
Yeah, and it's cool, like you said earlier, but especially at that age, you could see where he might have just been afraid and been like, I already have some sons, I don't need to go through all this. But he did it, and it worked out to where everybody kind of got blessed from it, so that's good. Cool.
Right. So, can I double up and tell you the personal story?
Double up. I'm already getting shaky hands, so I don't know if any more is going to make it worse.
All right, that's all right. Well, So I told you I did Ancestry.com. I did the DNA.
You're John's brother.
Yeah, I'm John's brother. That's right. My parents decided to do it as well. And so like John, I never really checked the messages, because you get messages every once in a while saying, oh, this person's connected to you or that person. And, you know, all of the messages were going to one of the dump email addresses that I didn't really check on a regular basis, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I was apparently getting messages that I didn't see, because my father started getting messages as well from a woman who was, I think, a year older than my brother. So that means that she will be 50 this year. And my father was showing up as being very closely related to this woman, possibly even her father. Well, my father just, you know, said this can't be. He's, you know, shocked by this. Well, what ended up happening was they looked into it and they reached out to this woman. My father had two brothers, one older and one younger. His older brother, Jim, lives in Washington, D.C., works there, you know, has grown children, or worked there, I should say. He's retired. And then my father had a younger brother named John. Now, John was sort of the wild child. He was the 60s musician. He was in a band that would tour all over the country. And eventually, and this is from a very conservative family, so this was a very, you know, he really stood out. And eventually John kind of put away his dreams of being a musician, decided to come home and get a job, and he met a woman named Jessie. And Jessie was pregnant with their first child. They got married, and in a horrible stroke of disaster, Jessie is driving home one night and gets into a terrible car accident, and she is killed, along with the baby that she's carrying. 3 weeks later, John is killed in a separate car accident.
Damn.
This is back in 1980. So, John and his wife and their child are all killed within the span of 3 weeks. It's unfortunate I never got to know him. But, looking at this woman that reached out to my father and connecting some dots together that they talked, it ends up that John, while he was traveling around the country in the band, had a, you know, one night stand with a woman in Connecticut, I believe, and left. And, you know, this is back in, you know, the early 70s, where you couldn't just find people. You couldn't just find them on Facebook or exchange phone numbers.
Right. If you don't have each other's information, they're gone.
Yeah, he's gone. And so he never knew that she had gotten pregnant.
Hmm.
And she had a daughter. And she never was able to tell this woman what her father's name was. But through ancestry, she was able to connect the dots. And so I have a brand new first cousin. And my father has a brand new niece. And part of John is alive,
yeah.
And we didn't think that he was.
Very cool.
And so, and my parents have been so, so happy to meet her, and they get together on a regular basis. And, you know, they have formed a bond, that she never had. And I'm really proud of them. I'm really happy for everybody, but it's beautiful. And so this story really touched on that for me.
That's cool. That's very cool.
All right, so do you think you can compete?
Yeah, I mean, your story's got a lot going on, right? Like, first of all, like, it was just a great story to begin with. Like, you're touching on ancestry, you're kind of touching a little bit into you know, foster stuff, when it's like you're obviously a foster father. So, I mean, this is all like stuff that's close to you, and and the ancestry stuff with your new cousin, right?
Yep.
Yeah, very cool.
She's my first cousin.
Yeah, like, it's a lot to compete with. And I don't have the length that you have. I'm hoping just to pull a couple of heartstrings. That's my only chance of success right now.
Okay,
so,
all right.
Yeah, without further ado, we'll jump into it. It's very interesting that you chose the story you did, because my story is a similar region. So, in clear, obvious, because I love them, Golden Girls style, picture it. London in the 1950s. You know who I'm talking about? You know what I'm talking about? Little Sophia action.
I'm intrigued.
All right, Little Sophia action. All right, so we're looking at the life of Margaret McCollum, who was married to Oswald Lawrence, who was her husband, because that's what happens when you marry. You got a wife and a husband, right? And he was...
Thank you.
He worked for the railroads as far as... I don't know if he directly worked for the railroads or if he was, like, contracted by them to do this, but they have an announcement that occurs at the railway stations in London that they call the Mind the Gap announcement. And since 1950, her husband, Oswald, his voice did the announcement. So it was in this certain location, especially near where Margaret lived, the most famous Mind the Gap announcement that existed.
And when I was 12,
yeah,
my family went to England, and I can verify what you're saying, because like when you take the tube, the train,
mm-hmm.
you know, the underground, when you when the doors open and shut, you hear that announcement, Mind the Gap.
Mind the gap.
And that has been a running joke in my family ever since.
Nice.
But yeah.
That's cool, because like this one, from what they say, it was the most famous. Now, I mean, if it's been playing since 1950, you can see why. In 2003, her husband Oswald actually died, and so Margaret, this is gonna get depressing first before it gets better. So bear with me, pod people. Margaret,
all the best stories do.
Right, and so to keep him close to her, Margaret went to the train station every day to listen to her husband's Mind the Gap announcement. But after half a century, they decided to replace his voice with an electronic recording for the Mind the Gap. Now, she freaked out, and rightfully so. She's at this point for years been going to listen to his voice to try to feel closer to him, and now they're replacing it. So all she asked of the transit authorities was, can I get the tape of my husband's voice saying Mind the Gap? So
I think that's a reasonable request.
It's definitely a reasonable request.
Reasonable,
right, and they obviously should have it, right? They don't just take it out and immediately pitch it in the garbage, right? So I wouldn't think. And I don't know if they alerted her that this was happening, or she just showed up one day and it was electronic and then she freaked out. That's probably more closely to the truth, because I don't think people realized she had been doing this, right? But the transport company decided that instead of just giving her this electronic tape version of her husband doing it, they would actually, in the location by her house where she went every day, continue to use her husband's voice indefinitely, and they put it back on. So this is a story about eternal love. Forever she will be able to get to hear her husband's voice until the day she passes and moves on to be with him. And it was a great thing for the transport authorities to do, that they cared enough. They could have easily just handed this woman a tape, right? But they're like, no, we will put it back on. And they play his voice to this day.
Oh, that's very sweet. I like that, and I'm glad that they did something nice for her. You know, it seems like we get opportunities every now and then to show grace or love or thoughtfulness to somebody, and it may require a little bit of work on our end of, you know, decision making. And it seems like whoever was in charge of the transport authority there, you know, I wonder how difficult it was to change the system for that station, but I can't imagine it was that difficult.
No,
but they got to, in that moment,
right,
provide something beautiful for someone. And I think we should all look for opportunities to do that.
Yeah, and I think it's actually a huge deal, just because, well, one, it was the right thing to do, but two, big companies like that, they do usually like to stay uniform, regardless of what it affects, right? So the fact that one station is playing his voice and the others are not bothers someone somewhere, but somebody was big enough to be like, nope, we're doing this. So that's kind of cool.
Right, right. Well, I wonder if it was the government, like a transport authority, or if it was a private company.
It was a transport authority, so it was the government standing up for her. And, yeah.
And they are, and we know that government decisions like that are often bureaucratic and unyielding most of the time. So that's even more remarkable that they made that decision.
Right.
She must have touched someone.
So. Yeah. This story was actually a story that my oldest sister sent to me, and it had been posted on Facebook on August 2nd. So this is, like I said, this is still to this day playing. This is like a recent post. So, yeah, very cool.
Yeah. Yeah, and you connected with me really well because, like I said, I can remember that back in... We went to London in like 1990, and I remember hearing that over and over again on the subway.
You know what's interesting is 1990, his voice was changed to electric and electronic in 2003, and prior to that, from the way I'm reading it, he was the across the board dude. So you could have heard her husband's right. voice.
Oh, I guarantee it was, and we heard it in every stop that, you know, because we took the train there, the subway, the T or tube, whatever, the underground, I think we took it quite a bit while we were there. So, I mean that I can hear the voice in my head, like like sticking out to us. I have.
All right, awesome. So we've said both stories, and clearly I am the winner. No, I'm just kidding. All right, we'll do this diplomatically, and I think that the way we should do it is like this. So you presented first, so I'll let you present first again. Tell me all the reasons why. I want two things. I want you to tell me why or what the story that you think was the best had and why you think it should win, regardless of whether it was yours or mine. So begin.
Well, I'm having a tough time with it. I think your story wins.
Whoa!
But I thought yours was... It was a unique story.
All right, so yeah, I'll give you my perspective then. I wasn't expecting you to go that route, but I would say that the story that I think should win was yours. And the reason why, and I'm not just saying that because you said mine, there's definitely reason one, you had a ton of detail, right? So that was good. And then two, your story had, and this is when you'll know I'm telling the truth, it had fate. God wasn't going to let these people not know each other. These people, from all accounts, should have never met each other ever. But the world was not, and I say the world, the universe, you know, for me, it's God, was not going to let that happen. It wasn't going to go down that way. And it's a beautiful story, and it's really cool that the John was brave enough to actually go through with it, because he had a whole life, right? He didn't need to do that. He could have been like, what good could I do for this person's life at this point, and just moved on, right? Like, he didn't need to do that. So it's amazing that he had the courage to do that. It's amazing that they ever met to begin with, and it's amazing how much they touched each other's lives once they did. So very cool. And then I also loved, obviously, how you tied it to your experiences with Ancestry.com and your new old, and I say new old because she always existed, you just didn't know, but cousin, and that story was very cool. And it's awesome. So yeah. So it looks like we're either gonna have to agree to come to a tie or let the pod people decide if they would like to, but I think both stories were great. I mean, I do think that the story that I did is very cool, and it's awesome that Transport Authority did that for her. I don't have the details that you had though, and you don't really have the fate type of thing. You just have an act of human kindness, which is great, and that's a lot of what our show is gonna be about, so definitely important in that regard that they did this for this woman. But yeah, I would throw a bone to Steve.
Well, you know what? I think that's the perfect way for, you know, this to go. For us to be positive about each other's stories, to care about what each other told. I think both stories had their strengths. I think I was able to get more details for the story that I told. which made it a little bit more of an engaging narrative. But then again, I'm an English teacher, so I like telling the story.
I'm single, so I'm not engaging anybody.
Hey. Ladies, he's free.
Oh, yes, they're lining up.
Yep, from the pod universe. But I thought yours was... It was a unique story. You know, the story of a father not knowing that they have a child. Like, sadly, that's, you know, far more often than, you know, than we realize. And not that it wasn't a beautiful story, but it was a fairly common one. Yours was a unique moment in time and in history, even. And so I think it's good that we acknowledge that. And I think that if anyone wants to sound off and give us their response, what can they do? How can they tell us, Ben?
Well, they can reach out to throughtheabysspodcast.com. They can reach out to us on Facebook on Through the Abyss Podcast, and just let us know. And even if you aren't trying to declare a winner, that's fine. If you just connected to either of these stories, or if you have futuristic stories that we could do that you are interested in us telling, whether they be something that is an occurrence of your own life or something that you've heard about that you just think is super positive and something that people would relate to and really be inspired by, those are the kind of stories we're trying to put. Because as we said in the last episode, just to give a brief recap of what the show is in case you've listened to this one on its own or both of them and still don't know, right? The world is full of negative things and we're trying to put a positive one out there. So in a nutshell, that's where we're going, and we would obviously love to hear from you guys in any respect. And that said, Steve.
Also, I was going to say, they can also go to Apple Podcasts or wherever they're listening to it. Mm. They can rate and review.
Yeah, rate and review.
And they can leave specific messages there, either general messages of what they enjoy about all the Through the Abyss podcast episodes, or they can answer the question of whose story was the best.
Absolutely. All of those things can be done. And that said, I would like to offer you another challenge, Steve.
Ooh, I'm excited. Bring it on.
You came at me hard last time. It's kind of the same as yours, so I feel like it's a cop-out, but I want to be very specific about it. Okay. So it'll be another blind-to-blind story challenge.
Okay.
But the very best, and obviously positive, because we don't want some negative, depressing thing in the positivity, proclivity for positivity podcast, love story.
Ooh. So, a positive story about love, a unique story about...
And you can take that any way you want. You can take that any way you want. There's romantic love, there's friendship love, there's whatever you consider love. But it's a great story,
between
right?
Between a mother and their child.
Love, mother and child.
Yeah. Okay.
And it could just be a human being super kind to another human being, because that's also love. So it's specific, but it's also pretty general, because you can interpret it however you want.
I like it. I will see your challenge. I accept your challenge.
Nice. All right. So, pod people, that is episode 2 of the Proclivity for Positivity. As we said earlier, you can find us at throughtheabysspodcast.com. We have a Facebook page. We have an Instagram page, both with the same names. And you can find us on any podcast platform. Also, all of podcast platforms are accessible through throughtheabyss.com. And I am Ben, and this other guy is whoever he tells you he is. I assume he's Steve. I don't know. Who are you today?
I am Steve. Nice. I am Steve today.
All right, pod people. Keep it real. And mind the gap.
Bye.
We have a proclivity for positivity. Yeah.